Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Maryland Congresswoman April McLean Delaney, who joins us to discuss the USDA reorganization, the Skinny Farm Bill, and rural broadband. But first, here's this week's headlines. The American ag sector is cautiously celebrating the first two trade deals President Donald Trump announced with Indonesia and Japan. Indonesia said it would eliminate almost all tariffs on U.S. products, while the U.S. will keep a 19% tariff on Indonesian imports. The agreement saw Indonesia commit to buy over $4 billion of soybeans, soybean meal, wheat, and cotton as part of a series of forthcoming commercial deals. The pact with Japan will leave the 15% U.S. tariffs in place on Japanese exports. Meanwhile, Japan committed to purchasing $8 billion worth of U.S. goods, including corn, soybeans, fertilizer, bioethanol, and sustainable aviation fuel. They also increased market access for U.S. rice by raising their import quotas by 75%. Opponents of California's Proposition 12 used a House Agriculture Committee hearing Wednesday to voice their concerns about the impacts of the animal welfare law on the nation's pork producers. The voter-approved and Supreme Court-upheld law requires that pork sold in California come from the offspring of sows not raised in gestation crates. The hearing coincided with the introduction of a bill from Iowa Congresswoman Ashley Hinson to prohibit state and local governments from interfering with the production of livestock in other states, mirroring the EATS Act she led last Congress. House Agriculture Committee Chair G.T. Thompson said a legislative solution to Prop 12 would be addressed in the Skinny Farm Bill he wants to move this fall. The Agriculture Department will close major facilities and relocate staff to regional hubs as part of the agency's long-awaited reorganization plan. Announced Thursday, the plan will close the USDA South Building, as well as the George Washington Carver Center, Braddock Place, and the Beltsville Agricultural Research Center in Maryland. The plan will reorganize regional operations into five hubs around the country in Raleigh, North Carolina, Kansas City, Missouri, Indianapolis, Indiana, Fort Collins, Colorado, and Salt Lake City, Utah. The news was delivered by Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins to employees by video. Congresswoman April McLean Delaney represents Maryland's 6th Congressional District. We asked for her thoughts on the USDA's reorganization plan, including the closure of the Beltsville Ag Research Center in her state.
I'm always a little bit hesitant about, you know, rash changes and moving a couple thousand people, employees across the country. I kind of like gradual, thoughtful decisions. So I want to make sure that that happens. But I guess as a general matter, in terms of all of these agencies that are being rapidly reorganized, sometimes things fall in the mix. And there are certain things that are not getting done at USDA. Like for instance, our Farm Service Agency in our FSA office in Maryland has had a vacancy for a long time, and that's happening across the country. And there's, you know, a lot of backlog that you're seeing with some of the USDA applications. So I just worry that in this big reorganization and a rush towards effectiveness and efficiency that we wanna make sure that we get some of the core services done for farmers.
And, you know, you're not the first member of Congress, not the first person to raise the red flag and say, oh, there's still staffing shortages mm-hmm. from the first round of staff reductions. You know, can you elaborate a bit more on that? And you said that those are
producer-facing
roles?
I would love to. Well, first of all, I'm going to lift up and say, I represent an incredibly diverse district in terms of topography, but also suburban, urban, rural farmers, what have you. But I have five agencies within Maryland's 6th Congressional District, like NIST and parts of NIH and Institute on Cancer and Fort Detrick. And so, with respect to whenever you talk about, you know, the FSA offices or what have you, I have seen a lot of cutbacks in research, cutbacks in staffing, the inability of people to get through on call lines. So some of these staffing reductions really are cutting back trust in some of our government agencies and that they're fulfilling core missions.
The Department of Government Efficiency, also known as DOGE, has access to Farm Service Agency data. You know, are you hearing that as a concern from your constituents?
Huge, huge. Well, I'm always concerned when people give farmers, individuals give their information to the government, whether it be their Social Security information, whether it be, healthcare information in HIPAA, or whether it be sensitive farming data and personal information. I think that there is a real imperative for the government to safeguard that information because we don't expect it to be breached and given to third-party contractors. But unfortunately with DOGE, we are seeing again and again a lot of these agencies that that information has been given to people who are not employees or not high-level employees. And so I actually have just written a letter to Agricultural Secretary Rollins and others to really question them about how this information has been safeguarded for farmers. What are the protections in place? Have others outside the agency received that information?
We'll be back with more from Congresswoman McLean Delaney right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Congresswoman April McLean Delaney serves as chair of the New Democrat Coalition's Rural Broadband Task Force. We asked her how freezing the Rural Development Broadband Reconnect Program and broadband funding could slow rural economic development.
The problem with some of these USDA funding freezes with respect to broadband, or even the NTIA, the $65 billion BEAD program, the problem is when you start to reanalyze and relook at how these are being given out, or even putting them in one pot together is now being discussed, you're going to slow down the ability for many of those providers to put it in the ground, and it's going to actually delay a lot of these rural farming communities getting their internet. I'm also really concerned that still that there will be some farmers left behind, because the reason why we have these subsidies is because it's not economical or feasible for private companies to do it. They just don't make the return. And that's why you have government stepping in to subsidize this so that everyone has the access, even if there's 10 families on one long road, that last mile. But we do have to look at other alternatives, including satellite or microwave in addition to wire, to making sure that there's a fast and affordable way for them to get internet.
I want to pivot now to discussing the skinny farm bill. We saw in budget reconciliation inclusion of, many farm programs beneficial to your constituents, but that came at the cost of cuts to the nutrition program. So I'm wondering, as you're beginning negotiations on that skinny farm bill that the chairman hopes to move this fall, do you think that there's a potential that there could be a restoration of some of those nutrition cuts?
I certainly hope so. And I have to commend both Ranking Member Craig and Chairman our Chairman JT. He's just been amazing at trying to work together in a bipartisan way. The one thing I would say is, as Chairman Thompson did understand, that some of these SNAP cuts are going to have an impact. In my district, for instance, 1 in 9 families rely on supplemental nutrition assistance, but half of them are children. And they keep talking about able-bodied people, but a lot of times it's just red tape, and irrespective of who your parents are, children should not suffer. The other part I will say is that farmers benefit from SNAP. Many farmers sell into the SNAP program, and for every dollar you put into SNAP, you actually get $1.50 back into your economy. For the truckers, for the grocers, for the the fruits and vegetables that are given to the kids' school programs, which is more healthy for our children, by the way. So in a multitude of ways, I'm hopeful some of that funding gets restored. I think that once you see the impact of SNAP, and that there will be some more issues with our food pantries, because there's going to be a run that is going to be hard.
And lots of programs within the skinny farm bill important to rural America, renewal of many USDA programs as well. I'm curious, will you and your Democratic colleagues, do you think you'll be willing to come to the table? And you mentioned
Definitely.
That bipartisanship, but the willingness to negotiate on that.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I ran on common sense, common ground, and I keep saying I am desperately trying to find it. I think Chairman Thompson, on the Ag Committee, it has been trying to find common ground, and the Ag Committee has traditionally been very bipartisan. But I am disappointed, coming in as a freshman member of Congress, that you know there has not been, writ large, a lot of bipartisanship that has been shown by the Republicans, and it has really been abdicated to, you know, our president. And so I'm hopeful that in the upcoming months that we will be able to come together, because we need to have crop insurance. We need to make sure that there's a safety net for, you know, our farmers. We need to have maybe the skinny bill, as they're calling it, but we haven't been reauthorized since 2018. We haven't had a full farm bill. It's just been, you know, extended and extended. You know, our farming communities are agricultural interests and businesses, they really are depending on us to do our work and to get it done.
We'll be back with our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at drought conditions across the country in this week's Map It Out.
U.S. farmers and ranchers are seeing improved drought conditions across much of the country. Here are the current drought conditions. White represents normal conditions, yellow areas show abnormally dry areas, and increasing variations of orange through red represent higher levels of drought. The Southwest is seeing the worst drought conditions right now. There's exceptional drought in parts of Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The central and eastern parts of the country are seeing relatively good conditions. Rain over the past few weeks across the plains and east coast has lowered most of these states into either no drought or abnormally dry conditions. According to USDA, 74% of the country's corn crop is in good or excellent condition. Compared to this time last year, drought is worse out west, but better across the plains in the eastern part of the country. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down. And without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act includes many farm bill programs and elements important to farm country. We're joined by Eric Steiner with OFW Law and Shirley Bloomfield with NTCA, the Rural Broadband Association, on today's panel. First, Eric, where will farm country see the biggest impacts from the reconciliation bill, and how soon could they feel the effects?
There's a lot to love for production agriculture in the Big Beautiful Bill. As you mentioned, the updates to reference prices, to crop insurance, to taxes. There's a lot of things that can help production agriculture right now at a time when they really need it most. I know USDA will be working very quickly to implement these provisions just as quickly as possible. I don't have an exact timeline for that, but you can bet that they're going to do everything they can to get this money and the support out the door as quickly as possible, especially at all these farmers that need it.
Chairman Thompson is committed to moving a skinny farm bill this fall, including the elements left out of reconciliation, which found those savings through a SNAP cost share proposal with states. I'm wondering first, Eric, how you see this proposal hitting states that will have to fund and implement it, and second, if these cuts could be clawed back in skinny farm bill negotiations.
Yeah, it's a good question. And through the course of reconciliation, and which was the Big Beautiful Bill, the provisions that would require states to match some of the food benefits that typically would come from the federal taxes won't be coming into play for a couple years. So that'll give states a little bit more time to plan, to try to get their SNAP air rates lowered a little bit, to try to avoid paying some of that cost share. But you're right, some of those administrative fees will start, you know, as soon as October 1 this year. And states will be needed to pay about additional money to administer the program. For some states, that may be easier than others. The more participation that they have in the program, the more administrative funds that they'll need to bring to the table. So that will be a challenge. For the skinny farm bill, don't know if that will be clawed back or offset at all. But I know from experience, so having worked for Chairman Cochran and Chairman Chambliss on the Senate Ag Committee, and then later for Chairman Roberts, you know, did two farm bills. You know, both our kids were born three farm bills ago. That's kind of how we measure life in our family. And I know the importance as well as the difficulty of really trying to establish a bipartisan farm bill full of provisions that both sides of the aisle can support. It is difficult to put together, and as you can imagine right now, there's a lot of raw nerves on both sides of the aisle, and there will always be a few on both sides of the aisle that just don't support farm bills, period. So in a scenario where we have such tight majorities in House and Senate, it's more crucial than ever to be able to put a bipartisan farm bill together.
And surely bringing into the conversation, as we look ahead to a skinny farm bill, reauthorizing and funding rural broadband assistance is one topic that also needs addressing. What elements are at a standstill right now, and what do you hope to see in that skinny farm bill?
You know, one of the things that people don't really understand is that there's a lot of telecommunications funding that comes through USDA, through the RUS program. So a couple of things that we're really focused on is the president's budget actually zeroed out the telecommunications portion of the bill. However, the appropriators are looking to return that funding, which is really important, because that support will ensure that those networks that have been built into these rural and ag communities not only get sustained, but obviously further deployment, because we know there's still a lot of rural Americans waiting for connectivity. And we also know how much technology has been putting in to precision ag and the tools that can provide. So as we look forward to the fall, you know, I think a few things we're hoping to see is continued full funding for the RUS program. And there's also a program called ReConnect, which was established about 5 or 6 years ago, which is essentially a grant and loan program. And that has been incredibly impactful in really building broadband into some of these communities where you just can't make a business model for sustaining that broadband. So we remain very, very hopeful. And just like Eric noted, seeing a bipartisan effort, the one thing that we see on the broadband front is Democrat, Republican, everybody is in favor of ensuring that all Americans have access to connectivity.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. Internet connectivity in rural areas is important, but so is having a high enough speed to complete telehealth, streaming, and other functions. We asked Shirley Bloomfield why it's important to both continue deploying broadband and continue ramping up speeds.
So I'll tell you what I'm starting to sense, which is concerning me a little bit, is a little bit of a sense of just enough is good enough for rural Americans. I'm picking that up with some efforts that we're seeing to kind of lower what we consider to be the broadband speed stakes, the goals that we've kind of set out there as a country. The fact that symmetrical speeds, the ability to upload and download at equal speeds, which is really important if you're doing telemedicine, very important if you're really trying to run a small business in these communities. And I think we've got a real job in front of us to ensure that folks recognize and appreciate the fact that just because rural Americans are living there, what that contributes to the American economy. So I do think there's going to have to be a little bit of a push to continue to educate people about technology choices. And we've got to really ensure that we're not looking to settle. I know there's a lot of interest, for example, in low Earth orbit satellites. you know, does that fill a gap in the meantime? Is that a great tool if you're in an incredibly remote area until you can get a more robust network? Yeah, absolutely. Is it really a long-term solution? Is it really going to kind of drive some of the rural economy? I really am very doubtful of that capability. So again, I think we've got to continue to educate policymakers about why rural America actually deserves to have the same comparable service and comparable pricing that we see here in urban America.
Eric, you've seen many farm bills during your career. How do the elements in reconciliation and now looking at the skinny farm bill stack up with previous farm bills? And with the cuts to the nutrition program, do you think Democrats will be willing to come to the table and negotiate as needed?
Yeah, it's a good question, Lydia. I mean, this time, because of the big, beautiful bill, and as I would share with folks too, the ag committees didn't ask for those really large reductions in spending, but they were able to use that opportunity to plus up some parts of agriculture that normally would be very difficult, if not impossible, to try to do in a regular farm bill that would typically need to be budget neutral. So in this sense, they were able to plus up the programs for farm country that needed to happen, and now they can turn to focus on those policy areas that just weren't able to be considered during reconciliation because specifically for the Senate reconciliation budget rules. So now there'll be a chance for those, the rest of these items, which there's so many and so many different parts of the farm bill that impact, you know, all sectors of the agriculture economy. Now we'll have a chance for the Republicans and Democrats to hopefully be able to work together and agree on some bipartisan things to be able to make improvements that haven't had a chance to be done in the last 5 years.
And Shirley, I want to get your thoughts on the BEAD program, the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, which was paused for review by the Trump administration earlier this year. Has that work restarted and will it continue?
So we are very excited about this program. And I think for rural America, this is the last big shot at getting some capital infusion in there. I'm actually really glad that the Infrastructure Act passed in a bipartisan way in 2021, because given the political environment today, this would have been a very tough bill to pass. But it's got $42 billion in funding to build broadband into these rural communities, unserved, underserved communities. We continue to think it's a great opportunity. The Trump administration did pause it. They did change a little bit of some of the rules that they are looking at. My concern on that is they kind of have created this bargain basement round, which again goes back to my earlier concerns about let's not just settle here in rural America. Let's not just go with a choice because it's the cheapest. Let's make sure that it is the best long-term investment, because I think we all know that there will never be this type of capital funding for broadband again. The states are now dealing with this. They will have to have their plans approved and their bids approved by NTIA. So I'm really hoping that we see a focus on scalability and less on what is the bargain basement cheapest bid that comes in.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke has more on the percentage of people who think the food system produces affordable food in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Over 50% of Americans feel that the U.S. food system produces affordable food, according to the most recent Gardner Food and Agricultural Policy Survey. This chart shows the last 2 years of the survey results when people were asked if the food system produces affordable food. You can see people have been feeling better lately about food affordability. The percentage has been trending upward for about a year now, from 50% to 57%. Numbers were lowest in August of 2023 at 49%. But despite the optimism, people are still concerned about tariffs. Of the 1,000 people surveyed, 79% expect tariffs to increase or somewhat increase food prices, and 77% say they are worried about how tariffs will impact food prices. If you're interested in the most recent wave of proposed reciprocal tariffs and how they could impact you, check out Oliver Ward's reporting on our website, agripulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. The House is out for recess and won't return to Washington until after Labor Day. Next week, the Senate will be in session. The Senate Ag Committee will meet to reauthorize the U.S. Grain Standards Act. And many communicators in the ag media space will gather in Rogers, Arkansas for the annual Ag Media Summit. Tune in next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments in all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.